Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is March the 4th, 2016. Could spring almost be on the horizon, hopefully, although we are getting some snow this weekend, but only a little bit here on the East Coast. Those of you familiar with my program know that I am a retired senior special agent of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I was with that agency for about 30 years. And at least on paper, the mission of immigration enforcement was moved over to the Department of Homeland Security, split into multiple agencies, all of which under this administration in particular, utterly dysfunctional where immigration is concerned, not because it can't be done. You know, my mom used to say, where there's a will, there's a way, but because this administration and politicians from both sides of the aisle don't want the mission to be carried out successfully. The purpose of my program, ever since the attacks of 9/11, is to try to wake up as many of our fellow Americans and as many of our supposed leaders as possible as to the true significance of our borders and our immigration laws. And that's why we're here, and that's why I'm so pleased that you're joining me. For those of you, by the way, over at Red State Talk Radio, this program will air on Monday. So we're 2 or 3 days ahead of you, but in any event, whichever way you're listening to the program or whether it's by podcast, I thank you. I thank you for listening, taking the time, and hopefully the information that I provide you with will enable you to ask the questions of our leaders to make them accountable. Questions are essential. It all starts by questioning authority and asking the right questions. But before you can ask the right questions, you need to have the information that you need to understand the issue as best as you can. Again, that is the purpose to my program. Incidentally, I've got some websites I would love for you to go visit. Again, this is old news to my old listeners, irrespective of what your date of birth might be. But for those of you new to the program, I welcome you, and I ask that you go to the michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net is my own personal website. Also, for a number of years, I'm proud to have been working in close coordination with Californians for Population Stabilization. That's a mouthful, but the website is easy. It's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. In fact, I've got an article that will be coming out within the next few days about holding journalists accountable. Just as we need to hold politicians accountable, we need to hold journalists accountable, and what I've written about is the need for honesty among so-called journalists. Anyway, capsweb.org, please go to that website where I join many other writers on issues that include immigration. Obviously, this is my area of expertise, but it's a website that each and every day puts new stuff up. Very insightful, very important, very worthwhile for you to check out. Tell your friends about it, capsweb.org. I also write for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I am proud to be a columnist for Front Page Magazine. And also The Social Contract. And in fact, the summer edition of The Social Contract featured my article as the lead article, and it was a retrospective looking back at 9/11, the 9/11 Commission report and findings and recommendations, and where we are today, 14 years after the attacks of 9/11, that's The Social Contract. I did another article in the winter edition, which is the current edition, on the dangers inherent in sanctuary cities. One of my pet peeves, sanctuary cities, where the mayors and leading officials, in my judgment, and in, if you look at the law, it goes beyond just my opinion, are clearly committing felonies by aiding, abetting, inducing, harboring, shielding aliens whose presence in our country represents a violation of law. And that's nuts. So please check out Front Page Magazine. I've got lots of articles on that publication that I hope you find helpful. One of them, by the way, is about the way that pollsters do their job. You know, public opinion poll says this, but it's all skewed. It's all absolutely skewed. And my most recent article for Front Page Magazine, which was published just 2 days ago, Ukrainian National Infiltrates Harrisburg High School, and goes on and says, well, it talks about the way that this guy from the Ukraine took on a new identity. Think about this one. Imagine if you have a child or a grandchild in public school. Imagine if you're in school and you don't even know who's sitting next to you in the classroom. You know, we hear all this about workplace violence. Here is a young man who lied about not only his name and his parents' citizenship, but lied about his age. He's actually in his 20s, going to high school. Now, the facts about this case are so startling that I want to start out talking about this particular case, because it is, to me anyway, it blows my mind, but it also does something else. This particular case provides us with an understanding of just how dangerous illegal immigration is, and not just to the people along the border. This is an issue that impacts all 50 border states. The craziness of all of this is that we keep hearing about securing the border, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's others who he's dragged along with him begrudgingly, perhaps. First, we're going to secure the border. You know, I've been writing about this forever and complaining about this forever. You know, we are a nation of 50 border states. None of the 9/11 terrorists, I want you to think about this, none of the 9/11 terrorists ran the borders in order to enter the United States. They came through ports of entries. I want you to consider what that means. They entered the United States through ports of entries. That's the issue for you to focus on. And so when you realize that, in point of fact, we are actually a nation of 50 border states. 50. Not just one or two or three or four, you know, Mexico, and they look at, you know, California, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. Yeah. They're having a big problem with people running the border, and we have to fix the border. I don't want somebody walking away from my program today saying, boy, this crazy guy Cutler doesn't think that we should do something about securing the Mexican border. No, the Mexican border has to be secured. Whatever it takes, we've got to stop what is happening on the border. The tunneling under the border, the people climbing over the fence, that's a terrible situation, because you have people evading the inspections process conducted at ports of entry, which in part are supposed to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are mentally ill and violent, or sex offenders and criminals and fugitives from justice, and aliens who are spies, terrorists, human rights violators, war criminals. I mean, goodness, who in their right mind doesn't care about keeping that sort of clientele, if you will, out of our country? Aliens do not have an inherent right to enter the United States any more than we do not have an inherent right to enter into any other country. Our immigration laws do not prohibit Americans from entering the United States. Under the law, we may not stop an American from coming home. Under no circumstances. Zero. Now, it may well be that an American coming back into the United States is wanted for arrest by some agency, whether it's local, federal, state. We will hold that person at the port of entry for arrest. I've done it as an inspector. I began my 30-year career as an inspector at Kennedy Airport, where I served for 4 years before I became an agent. So if somebody came in and we checked the guy's name out and the guy's wanted, then we would call up the FBI, DEA, U.S. Marshals, the city police, state police, whoever had the warrant. But could not take an American citizen and say, back on that airplane, you're going home. Under no circumstances. And that's an important distinction. In fact, when I went to Border Patrol Academy, we were taught, which is where all enforcement personnel for immigration went for training, we were taught that you inspect aliens, examine U.S. citizens. It may sound like semantics, but it's not. The reason for the distinction is that an alien seeking entry has to prove that he or she is not an intending immigrant, someone who plans to stay in the United States permanently, plans to work, or is otherwise excludable. But so that's why we do an inspection of the alien. Once the inspector is convinced that the person standing in front of him or her is an American, then we go from inspection to examination, which means you check the documents, you verify all the information, and on they go. They're welcome into the United States. So I want everyone to have a clear understanding about why we have ports of entry and an inspection process, and we spend a lot of money on it. Customs and Border Protection does two basic jobs. Number one, making certain, supposedly, that nobody sneaks into the country. That's the mission of the Border Patrol. It's also the mission of the Coast Guard to make sure we don't have ships coming in and sneaking in the dead of night, the way the Germans did during the Second World War. So the Coast Guard is also involved with border security, the 95,000 miles of coastline being that border that the Coast Guard bears responsibility for, and they share the responsibility with the Border Patrol, by the way. But between ports of entry, land border, Canada, Mexico, Border Patrol, and we have over 20,000 Border Patrol agents. But then you have the inspectors and their support staff at ports of entry, and there are 328 of those ports of entry, both land border, seaport, airport. Every state with an international airport lies along the coast of the United States or lies along the northern or southern borders are all border states. New York State, my home state, it's the trifecta. We've got seaports, we've got airports, and we've got the Canadian border. So 50 border states. Well, the story of concern that I want to focus on this evening about an individual by the name of Artur Samarin, S-A-M-A-R-I-N. He was a citizen of the Ukraine, entered the United States on a temporary visa. There's been some dispute going into the newspapers, and, you know, reading newspaper accounts is a hit-and-miss proposition. But he entered with either a tourist visa or an exchange visitor visa program visa, the J-1 visa, and then decided he didn't want to go home. He wanted to stay in the United States. He befriended this old couple, and they decided that they would claim to adopt him. Now, they could not adopt him because he was too old to be adopted. So guess what? They managed to get him a birth certificate, a counterfeit birth certificate in a different name, their name. And with that birth certificate, he then got a driver's license and a Social Security card, and he actually got to go to a high school up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So you have this guy in his 20s attending high school with young kids, and it then turned out that, according to police allegations, that he had sexual relations with a number of underage girls. This isn't victimless. Imagine if, God forbid, this happened to your daughter, your niece, your granddaughter. This is insanity. But what gets even crazier is he wasn't content to simply go to school. And by the way, he had a 4.16 index, which is amazing. It goes beyond that. Because now that he's done that, he joins the ROTC, and he also became a member of the Navy cadets at the campus, and then tried to join, or actually did join, the Civilian Police Academy in Pennsylvania. And then eventually his background was discovered, and he was arrested. Not by immigration, as you might think. This guy was actually arrested by local police and immigration. DHS said, oh, we're monitoring the situation. How in the world do they talk about monitoring the situation when in reality they should be leading the charge? You know, think about that. Number one, under the law, federal law, it's Title 18, United States Code, Section 28, anybody who uses or produces or procures for use false identity documents is committing a felony. And he apparently claimed to be a United States citizen. By claiming to be a citizen, pardon me, he violated Title 18 United States Code Section 911, which makes such false claim to citizenship a 3-year crime. But instead of going after him, as immigration should, they said, well, we're monitoring the situation. why in the world, and again, these are only allegations, so we have to be clear, you're innocent until proven guilty in America, but presuming the accounts are accurate, let me just get some more to drink here. I've been, as you might imagine, with everything going on, quite busy on the phone today doing other radio programs and speaking with a bunch of people. So after a while, the throat gives out. Why did he join the ROTC? Was he planning, if not caught, to go and join the military? Why the Civilian Police Academy? This wasn't just a guy who was looking to keep a low profile and stay in the United States. And if he was that concerned about his conditions in the home country, why didn't he attempt to apply for asylum? The newspaper accounts said that he actually convinced these people to help him because he has bullet wounds and a stab wound. Again, allegations. Now there's a dispute over who abused the situation. He's making statements that they held him hostage, threatening to call immigration. They have a different version of the story. Quite a food fight, but you have a guy who's apparently been shot, if that account is accurate, trying to join our military and our and local police agencies. Why? What was his ultimate goal had he not been detected? This guy is now in his mid-20s, masquerading as a teenager, involved with the ROTC. This is a very bizarre story, and one that should give everybody serious cause for pause. We've seen in the past where terrorists have sought to join the military, where criminals have sought to join the military to get firearms and tactical training, maybe to steal weapons. I'm not saying he's doing this, but I'm saying that it's unusual for an illegal alien to go to high school, join the ROTC, join the Navy Sea Cadets, join the Civilian Police Academy. And immigration is monitoring the situation. How in the world does this protect the community? And think of those girls who were involved with this guy. They are underage girls. It's statutory rape if, in fact, the allegation is accurate. This is not victimless. And again, you have to ask, if the discovery had not been made by the police, what might have happened a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now? How many more people are out there like this guy who are doing the exact same thing? We have no idea. We have dreamers, you know, the deferred action cases, and we're told, oh, this is about the children. The dreamers can be as old as age 31. They snuck into the country. They are undocumented, which means they can't prove who they are. And if you can't prove who you are and we allow you to get an identity document, we know that the terrorists of 9/11, for example, in the aggregate, those 19 terrorists used more than 300 false names or variations of false names. It's certainly a worrying situation. And this guy could have applied for asylum. He didn't. He's obviously bright, a 4.16 index. That's an A-plus average, not a dummy. Excelled. So he had to know that that was a possibility. The family, if they were trying to help him, they falsely adopted him. I mean, this whole story with that family leaves me with my head kind of spinning. What in the world is really going on here? And we're talking now about Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We're not talking about the so-called four border states, and this reinforces that point. And then you have the candidates for the presidency saying, well, we can't deport all these people. Rubio said, well, we'll see what the American people want. What do you mean what the American people want? It almost sounds as though he's saying, well, we'll see what we can get away with, how far we can pull the wool over Americans' eyes. I'm disturbed by all the people running for the presidency today. Yesterday, when Mr. Trump talked about being flexible, I want to know what flexible means. I want to know why we're supposed to be educating foreign students in the United States and then to let them stay. I don't know if you folks know this, but today there are more than a million foreign students studying in the United States, more than a million. And nearly half of them are studying the STEM curriculum. What's STEM? Science, technology, engineering, and math. So I want you to think about that. we are told that our universities are incapable of cranking out the scientists, the computer programmers, the engineers, the biologists that we desperately need to succeed. Meanwhile, every other week, it seems, there's a story in the newspaper about American high-tech workers being fired and being ordered to train their foreign replacements under the threat of not getting their severance packages. Well, wait a moment. If these people have been working for you for years and you let them work here, and then en masse they are being fired, but they're so bad that they're still being told to train their replacements, this is about the dismantling of the middle class. It's the willful destruction of the salary structure. The Labor Department today came out with their wacky statistics. Well, unemployment remains at 4.9%, and they created 220-something thousand jobs in the last month. Whoopee. And by the way, every month we're bringing in almost 100,000, almost 100,000 immigrants, permanent resident aliens, many of whom will be able, they're all eligible to work here. Some might be children, some might be too old. We're talking about nearly 100,000 a month. Then we're bringing in a couple of 100,000 foreign workers with work visas. So, you know, when you start doing the math, basically every month we are bringing in more or less the same number of workers as the number of new jobs that are being created, and that's without looking at illegal aliens working without authority. That's without looking at aliens who are given status to work because they're foreign students and students are allowed to take practical training. If you add all of them up, the number of authorized aliens who can work in the United States exceeds the number of new jobs that are being created. But wonder of wonders, when the news report came out today, the brilliant journalist, the brilliant economist on TV said, well, you know, the economy is picking up. Everything is great. They created 200-something. No one's talking if these are part-time jobs. No one's saying if these are minimum wage jobs. No one's saying anything about the jobs. And they're not talking about how many jobs were lost. They're just telling you how many jobs were created. As those jobs are created, I'd love to know how many jobs went away when companies go bankrupt. And so you've got that going on. But here's the other thing that's very interesting. As an afterthought, they then announced on all the news programs, the one troubling fact is that wages are declining. Now, stop and think. We're being told, hooray, pop the champagne corks. New jobs here, folks. Oh, and by the way, wages are going down. Does that sound like good news or bad news? You see, this is about flooding the labor market with cheap foreign labor and driving down the wages. Now, it's great for the companies that are able to save money, except they're also losing their consumer base. This is as dopey as it gets. This is like buying an expensive sports car. You go out, you buy that Ferrari, you buy that Maserati or the Lamborghini, and you don't bother maintaining it. I'm going to save money on maintenance. The hell with the $1,000 oil change. Okay. And you drive the car for a couple of months, and you're having a grand old time, and then all of a sudden the engine seizes on some highway, and you have this big clunker of a car with a dead engine that costs God knows what to replace. If you destroy the middle class, this is a note to these genius business leaders, if you destroy the middle class, you are destroying your own consumer base. You're eating yourself. This is an act of self-destruction. You know, the greatest generation deserve that nickname, that moniker, for a bunch of reasons. The fortitude, the courage, the integrity they possessed, won the Second World War, beat the Nazis, great. But immigration back then was taken very, very seriously. Because back then, our leaders understood that for America to do well, Americans had to do well. That's the point. You know, I hear these people say, I'm a free trader. Well, we can be a free trader, folks, but when you have open borders, free trade destroy wage structure for Americans, because what we're doing is making American workers indistinguishable from workers in third world countries. And what standard of living do they, quote-unquote, enjoy in third world countries. You see, instead of America being the shining example that Mexico should be following, America is trying to become Mexico. And then we have these nonsense excuses. And then we're being told, well, if we get these people out of the shadows, well, look what happened with this guy. This guy gets false ID, builds a whole identity around it. You don't think that that would happen with the millions of illegal aliens who are present in the United States right now? And then I wrote this other article at the front page about how skewed immigration polls skewer Americans. Or as I put it in my email, Americans are being shafted by these polls, if you get my drift. And here's where the shafting is taking place. I got a poll from some outfit that professed to be hired by the GOP. And they said, you know, what are the issues that concern you the most? Now, what were my choices? Well, it was the threat of terrorism. And we've been told ISIS is determined to attack us this year. Is it the threat of terrorism? Is it the economy and job loss, wage erosion? Item number two. Item three, health care. Item four, immigration. There may have been a fifth item in there. So the way the survey worked, I tried to click off threat of terrorism and immigration. And a little thing comes up, ding, you know, a little sign, you can only pick one. So now what do? If you're concerned about terrorism, you click terrorism, immigration is gone. If you say immigration, then, you know, what are you really concerned about? If you say losing your job, then what about immigration? What if your job is being taken by somebody from India? So these polls are wacky. They are nonsense. But what then happens, and how many times have you seen it? Think about this. You're watching news, and everybody wants to believe in the newscaster. You know, Walter Cronkite was called America's most trusted, you know, newsman, you know, Walter Cronkite, all those guys back then, Edward R. Murrow, Eric Severide. I had the privilege of meeting Eric Severide's wife. She was traveling. He used to be the anchor over at CBS. I think it was with CBS. These people were the authority figures. They were trusted. And yes, I know some people are groaning and saying, oh, this guy leaned to the left, this guy leaned. We all lean a bit. But the facts were the facts were the facts. Today, the news looks more like a game show. The special effects and the noises and the animations and the story lasts 3 minutes and they'll have two people come on to argue with each other and then it's gone. And what have you learned from it? Probably nothing. And I know how frustrating that is because I've done hundreds of TV appearances. I've done bunches of those so-called food fights. You know, look, people just want facts. Just give them the facts. Here's a novel thought. When they talk about the unemployment rate, why don't they talk about the 95 million who aren't part of the labor force so they're not being counted so they can talk about a 4.9% unemployment rate, which is utterly meaningless. It's utterly meaningless. Why even bother? Why is it that they do this? Because they're all part of the problem. And you know, the news media has such a serious responsibility, and the pollsters, they're all in bed on these issues. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I want you all to think about something, and I bet you've never thought of this before. Whenever there's a revolution in some third world country, you know, you hear there's a coup d'etat, there was a military junta that took control. What's the first thing they generally take control of when there's an overthrow? The soldiers race and take control of the airport, and then they take control of the radio and television stations and the newspapers. Because in order to succeed, dictatorships have to control the flow of information, propaganda. And we hear this nonsense, oh, we're being too politically correct. No, folks, we're not being too politically correct. What we are being is Orwellian. It's nothing short of Orwellian. So when you hear this nonsense, oh, we're being too politically correct today. No, we're not. Let me give you two George Orwell quotes. I mean, they're so on target. Orwell, of course, wrote 1984 and amazing book. And it used to be required reading. When I went to high school, everybody had to read 1984. Do you know it's not required reading? So being the the sort of parent that I am. My poor kids, I put them through hell. I made it required reading for my own children. And folks, I suggest you do the same for your kids. You know, people keep complaining universities are indoctrination centers. They've always been indoctrination centers. Go back hundreds of years. The teacher teaches the lesson in accordance with what's the popular theory of the day. You know, you go back hundreds of years and people were taught that the earth is the center of the universe because that was the indoctrination. And when people said otherwise, they were in deep trouble. Galileo was imprisoned for contradicting that dogma. So understand that there's nothing new about indoctrination and education. When I lost my parents to cancer back in the 60s, I got a job at a medical library while I was going to college for two purposes. I really needed the money. My dad was gone and my mother was in pretty bad shape. She had breast cancer. And I needed the spending money, and I also wanted to learn as much as I could about cancer to try to find some way of helping my mom stay alive. She was only in her early 50s at the time, and I was all of 19. And I worked at a medical library. And if you went through the literature, the doctors were wonderful at the hospital. They let me sit in on their conferences about cancer so that I could learn as much as I could. They were very helpful to me. Unfortunately, it didn't work, but that was so many years ago. But the medical literature refused to accept the idea that anything that we eat might possibly cause cancer or have an effect on us. If you spoke about diet and cancer in the same word, you were treated as though you were nuts. This is witchcraft. It's witchcraft. Now, of course, everybody says, yeah, diet plays a role, nitrates and all this other business, right? So back then, what was in style, what was in vogue, food has nothing to do with it. Then, you know, we were told don't eat eggs, right? And then a couple of months ago they came out and said, oh, well, eggs aren't so bad after all. They don't know, but they teach. And what are they teaching? They're teaching what is commonly presumed to be accurate or politically expedient. And nobody challenges anything. You know, you ask the average adult who discovered America, and it'll take 2 seconds. Unless it's one of the folks that does jaywalking or Waters World, you know, Christopher Columbus, 1492. And I always want to say to them, were you there? How do you know? And now, in fact, it's really believed that the Vikings came here long before Columbus. So why does everybody say Columbus? Because they were indoctrinated in their history classes. We've always faced indoctrination. College campuses are more like the parade grounds on a military base than they are centers for free speech. I mean, yes, we used to have free speech, and now certainly it's stifled, incredibly so. But we've always faced the problem of indoctrination. And so George Orwell understood this. And so when he spoke about Newspeak and he spoke about, you know, what we're doing, his issue was the way that we censor our citizens. And that was the whole premise behind Newspeak in his book 1984. So let me just give you two of Orwell's great quotes. One is, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Anybody who dares question global warming is castigated, right? Castigated. Why? Why? Is it not reasonable to ask the questions? And, you know, let's be real blunt and honest. Let's have an honest moment here. Maybe everything that's being said about global warming is accurate. Maybe. But this is a question that I've raised with some scientists who I've met in my journeys. The scientific method, and I was studying engineering initially when I was in college. The scientific method says that you are supposed to conduct experiments by eliminating all of the variables except for the one variable for which you are testing. If you have more than one variable, then you don't know what might be muddying the waters and keeping it impossible for you to know what's really causing a situation. You know? So you've got to eliminate all of the variables except for that singular variable you're testing for. So then we're told, well, we don't know what all the variables are. Now, the sun is a star, and it's a variable star. What does a variable star mean? It means that it cranks out different levels of energy over a period of time. Sometimes more energy, sometimes less energy. So imagine if you had a light bulb and you had a dimmer switch and it was an incandescent bulb. As the bulb gets brighter, it gets hotter, and if you're near the bulb, you're going to get warmer because the bulb is getting warmer. Well, stars are the same thing. If a star starts turning out more energy because it's a variable star, I assure you that the planets orbiting that star are going to absorb more energy and their temperature will go up. So is it possible? And it's been determined that the sun is a variable star. So might that have a role to play? Maybe. We know that the Earth and the entire solar system are rotating around the Milky Way galaxy, and we're one of the arms of the galaxy, and it kind of goes up and down a bit, and so we're exposed to more and then less cosmic radiation. Could cosmic radiation cause changes in the environment, changes in temperature? They don't know. Could it be? Maybe. How does that figure into the experiment? And so when I raised the issue, I had one climatologist say to me, he said, well, you know, Mr. Cutler, if you track carbon dioxide and you track the temperature, they both go up in a parallel fashion. It matches. Except I had read where in 1999 it didn't match. So I asked him about that. And his answer was, well, I knew you were going to ask because that was just an aberration. I said, wait a minute, how did it become an aberration? Because it didn't fit your model? When you do a model to try to explain a phenomenon, and the model doesn't work, you don't discard the data, you discard the model and realize that maybe the model is flawed. To say this is an aberration is nuts. And then I raised another question. How do we know which is responsible for what? Supposing for other reasons the Earth is getting warmer, and if the Earth gets warmer, chemical reactions will increase. That's just a basic fundamental principle in chemistry. Most, not all, but most reactions will occur more rapidly as temperature goes up. I mean, fire is a good example, right? Fire is oxidation. So instead of rusting slowly or combining with oxygen slowly, when you burn something, it happens almost instantaneously. So what if temperature increases that have nothing to do with man's activities is causing biomass to decay more rapidly? Whether it's vegetation, whether it's the carcasses of dead animals, whatever. If you put meat in the freezer, it doesn't rot. Why doesn't it rot? Because cold keeps the chemical reaction from happening. But when you expose it to warm temperatures, it decays much faster. The warmer the temperature, the faster you have the changes, the more that it would outgas all the gases that you associate with the decomposition, including carbon dioxide. So my question is, what if the Earth's temperature is rising, not because of man's activities, but because of the sun, just to use that? And so now all the rotting vegetation, whatever it is that's out there, is rotting a little bit more rapidly. And if it rots more rapidly, it will outgas carbon dioxide more rapidly. And so the temperature is going up through not because of the carbon dioxide, but because of something unrelated to it, and then more carbon dioxide gets released because of the increase in speed of biomass decay. And maybe that is a greenhouse gas, so the carbon dioxide goes into the atmosphere because the biomass is decaying more rapidly, and that just tends to make the process go even faster. What if that's the case? And I've yet to get a satisfactory answer. Now, I might be all wrong. But all I'm suggesting is that we need to ask questions. And unfortunately, in America today, questioning authority, even and especially on college campuses, will get you into trouble. We need to learn to have confidence and the ability to ask the questions and demand the answers. Because when you stop questioning authority, you will have people that will take you down the road, they will take you the wrong way on a one-way street, and there will be hell to pay. And I'm just using global warming as an example. But understand what we're talking about. So the pollsters come out, and people are interesting. But actually all species are. We are conformists. We are conformists. We tend to be. Safety in numbers, we've all heard it. The bandwagon approach to persuasion, we've heard that. And when you see the commercials, 98% of all people prefer this peanut butter to that peanut butter, whatever. Who cares? Well, we do, because we figure if more people are buying that product, then that must be the product to buy. When you go to the store and you see that there's lots of one product on the shelf and it's not being sold and the other shelf is half empty, people tend to go to the shelf that's half empty. Why? Because lots of other people bought it. They must know what they're doing. Safety in numbers. So there's a program that I recommend you all watch, and I referenced it in my article for Front Page Magazine about the polls, and it's called Brain Games. And they show how people perceive things, how people make decisions, how memory works. It's a whole host of issues, and it's fascinating. I find it really fascinating, much better than most of the junk that's on TV these days, the so-called reality shows, which I have absolutely zero tolerance for. So they did it on the deck of the Intrepid, which is the aircraft carrier moored here in the west side of Manhattan in New York City. And they set up an experiment. They put up two charts. One chart had a single line, and the other chart had three or four lines of different lengths. And one of the lines was the same length as the line on that other chart, and they gave each of those lines a letter, you know, A, B, C, D, whatever. Now, so there's a guy on the end of this big, long line, and they ask all these people, supposed volunteers, which of the lines on the right is closest to the line on the left? Is it A, B, C, or D? Now, what was not disclosed to the last person on the line, that all the people in front of him, or all the people in front of her, because they did this repeatedly, were in on this. So they all picked the wrong line, but they picked the same wrong line. So let's say A was the same length as the original line, and everyone picked C. And then they get to this one guy who's actually the one, the test subject, and they said, well, which line looks the same? And almost invariably, what did they say? Well, gee, I thought line A looked like it was the same size, but since everybody went for line C, I'm going to go for line C. There were a few people who stood out and said, these people are nuts. I don't know what's wrong with them, but line A is the right one. But that was the very small minority, just like today. You have a couple of people who will stand up to authority, and the rest quietly go along. They get online, and they march along. And, you know, there's a wonderful little paperweight that I have, and it shows the dogs pulling a sled, and it says, unless you're the lead dog, the view never changes. You can figure that image out. And that's what's happening with the polls. When everybody hears that only 3% of Americans or 5% or 8% of Americans think immigration's a problem, they're sitting there saying, gee, I thought immigration was a big deal. But if this poll that was done by the Schmidlap organization or whatever, you know, making up a name, if they believe that it's only 3%, then I guess maybe it's the economy. Ignoring the fact that immigration is a critical issue where the economy is concerned, where national security and the threat of terrorism is concerned, it was set up that way. It was set up that way. Because if you ask people, what's a bigger concern, terrorism or immigration, they're going to say terrorism. Because no one's at that point thinking, gee whiz, I guess it's people mowing lawns or something, but here we're talking about people blowing us up, ignoring what the 9/11 Commission had to say. So we're getting bombarded from every direction. Hillary Clinton is out there beating the drum, and what is Hillary saying? Oh, you know, we're going to keep America together, and when they call people undocumented, they're making them second class. Second class, they're here illegally. They're trespassing. But they're second class, and I'm going to bring us together. And how is she going to bring us together? We're going to be living in poverty together, but of course she won't. And this has been going on, and it's been going on, and it keeps getting worse. And then people say, well, the schools are dumbing us down. No, they're not. We are allowing it. That's a victim mindset. And it's especially disturbing to me, folks, when I hear that kind of talk coming from conservatives, people who talk about, we need to have less government, we need to be independent. Well, if you want to be independent, then why in the world aren't you taking the bull by the horns and teaching your children what you think they should learn the way I've done? Now, I don't homeschool my children, but I've certainly had my share of discussions and debates, and when I've gone to Congress, I've taken most of my kids with me at one time or another to a hearing, so that they could see what the process looks like. Look, immigration is a huge issue. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer April 30th, 2009. There was a recent article out within the last month or two where Greenspan has not changed his position one iota. He is Darth Vader. And, you know, I've quoted him talking about the privileged elite, the middle class, earning this wage premium, and if we stopped shielding them, we could drive down the wages by eliminating that wage premium, and we would have wage equality. It's amazing. But even on the issue of illegal immigration, let me read this to you. This was part of Greenspan's prepared testimony when he testified for Schumer April 30th, 2009. He said this. There are two distinctly different policy issues that confront the Congress. The first is illegal immigration, the notion of rewarding with permanent resident status those who have broken our immigration laws does not sit well with the American people. In a recent poll, there we go again, but in this poll, two-thirds would like to see the number of illegals decrease. Now, he's using the word illegals, as I do. But now here's something interesting. Now, here's what Greenspan said, right? Even though the American people, two-thirds, that's a pretty good majority, a politician who wins by two-thirds would call it a landslide in this day and age. But Greenspan went on and said, but there is little doubt that unauthorized, that is, illegal immigration, has made a significant contribution to the growth of our economy. Between 2000 and 2007, for example, it accounted for more than a sixth of the increase in our total civilian labor force. The illegal part of the civilian labor force diminished last year as the economy slowed, though illegals still comprised an estimated 5% of our total civilian labor force. Unauthorized immigrants serve as a flexible component of our workforce, often a safety valve when the demand is pressing and among the first to be discharged when the economy falters. Some evidence suggests that unskilled illegal immigrants, almost all from Latin America, marginally suppress wage levels of native-born Americans without a high school diploma and impose significant costs on some state and local governments. However, the estimated wage suppression and fiscal costs are relatively small, and economists generally view the overall economic benefits of this workforce as significantly outweighing the costs. Accordingly, I hope some temporary worker program could be crafted. American wages are being driven down, but that's okay. And it's making states pay more money in services, but that's okay. And they're here illegally, but that's okay. This guy was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. Do you understand the scope of this betrayal? But here's something that's interesting. When I have sat down with members of Congress who are Republicans and read that to them and say to them, you know, there's a video of this. The Senate website still has the video of Greenspan making these outrageous statements. I said, why don't you get those statements and use them on political campaigns and go against any Democrat who calls for legalizing millions of illegal aliens? And with a couple of exceptions, people like Louis Gohmert and Jeff Sessions and my good friend Lou Barletta, they're the exceptionals. Steve King, they're the exceptions. You know what most Republicans do when I ask that question? Change the subject. They don't want to hear about it. This is insanity. Heroin addiction has become so prevalent throughout the United States. Last year, we started to read the accounts of how they were providing the antidote to heroin overdoses to police departments. It's gotten so bad, guess what's happening in New York City? School nurses in public schools are now being given the antidote to heroin overdoses and being trained in its use. Public schools. Heroin. It makes me want to throw up. This is disgusting. The AMA has now said that it's okay for young people to get painkillers that have opiates in them. And when they can't get the opiates, what do? These kids are ready, willing, and able to become heroin addicts because the habit has been created by the use of the legal painkiller that has opiates, and they're expensive. we've seen those terrible, violent robberies of drugstores, people looking for those prescription opiate drugs. So what's happened? The demand for heroin has gone through the roof. Through the roof. We have a heroin epidemic. And usually when the demand for any commodity goes up, the price goes up with it. Supply and demand, classic. Classic economics, supply and demand. It works for petroleum, it works for water, works for drugs. The demand goes up, the price goes up. But something strange is happening with heroin. You know what that is? The demand has never been higher and the price has never been lower. That doesn't make sense. How in the world could it be that the price of heroin continues to fall even as the demand increases? There's only one possible answer to that, folks. We have, for all intents and purposes, a limitless supply of heroin in the United States. And the drug proceeds, the money being spent by people to buy the heroin, is going right into the coffers, right into the bank accounts of the cartels, and it's also going into terrorist organizations that have become involved in the drug trade as a fundraising mechanism. If you want to go after the violence, you go after the drugs, you go after the transnational gangs. But that's not what we're doing. We're doing everything bass-ackwards, and we're doing it for a reason. I really believe that if you took the drug money out of the stock market, the banks, and real estate, they would take a major hit. Drug money is being washed through all of those sectors, and it's making lots of people very wealthy. There is a continuing showing on cable TV of the Cocaine Cowboys Reloaded. I want you to watch it. And, you know, somebody emailed me the other day and they said, Mr. Cutler, I heard you on a radio show. Do you believe that if we built the wall that we would stop the flood of narcotics coming into America? So before I tell you what I said, I want you to think about it. I want you to contemplate the question. Do you believe if we built the wall that we're hearing so much about, that we would stop the flow of narcotics into the United States? Any ideas? Let me tell you. If we stop the flood of narcotics into the United States through Mexico, what would happen is it would continue. It would just have to take a different route. And lots of the drugs pouring across our border aren't coming across the Mexican border either, even though lots of it does. Don't misunderstand me. But think of the French Connection case, where heroin was secreted in the rocker panels of a Lincoln Continental down at the Navy, at the Brooklyn piers. The drugs are coming in across the Mexican border, but they're also coming across the Canadian border to a lesser extent. They're coming in at the airports, and they're coming in at seaports. They're flooding in. And if you could get the deflector shield off the Starship Enterprise and block off the entire Mexican border, it would take a while, but eventually the smugglers would find an alternate route. So I want you to think about something, going back to the film The Cocaine Cowboys. Most of you probably remember Miami Vice, and there was a remake of that TV series as a movie a few years ago. Miami Vice focused on the drug trade in South Florida, in Miami Beach. And where were the drugs coming from? Colombia. And how were the drugs getting here? By speedboat, boats they used to call cigarettes. These are these big, massive, super-fast speedboats. And they'd be driving them right into Florida, and the drugs would come ashore. And most of the building boom of the 80s was directly attributed and funded by the drug trade. Politicians were being bought off. Florida sought to rush police onto the street to combat the violence. There were drive-by shootings. The homicides were out of control. Everything had gone haywire. So they rushed police in, didn't properly vet them. And the point they make in the movie is that half these cops either wound up in the cemetery or jail because they weren't screening them properly, and the amount of money that was flowing corrupted some decent people, I guess. So maybe they weren't decent. But the point was corruption became a huge problem. And then the vice president's task force in the late 80s took on the speedboats. They brought in the Navy, they brought in the Coast Guard, they brought in everything they could possibly do, and they stopped those boats from entering the United States through Florida. Boom, We put up a deflector shield. Problem solved, right? Not really. Because what the Colombians then did, and DEA had extradited a bunch of the Colombian kingpins and prosecuted them, so the Colombians came up with a strategy, and they said, you know what? If we can have Mexico forward the drugs across that southwest border of the United States, we give them a piece of the action, they insulate us from American law enforcement. And that, boys and girls, is how Mexico became this big problem for the United States, because we interdicted the speedboats coming directly from Colombia into Miami. Don't you believe that similarly, if we could completely seal up the Mexican border, that again you would see the method of smuggling the drugs into the United States shifting from one place to the other? It's naive to think that you could simply do one thing and everything will fall into place. That's why I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. The notion that if you plug, and in fact it would only be a partial plug, one hole in the bottom of the colander, that somehow you will have turned that colander that you use to drain pasta into a bucket. It's delusional. It will not work. But this is what we're confronting. We're being given simplistic answers to problems that need a little bit more thought and a little bit more understanding. You know, anybody who's going to be serious about fixing immigration should be bringing on board not politicians, not commissioners, but people who did the job. You know, I've done a bunch of congressional hearings, and one day I sat down with Lamar Smith, who invited me to do a bunch of hearings. He used to chair the Immigration Subcommittee. At one point, he chaired the House Judiciary Committee. And I said to Lamar Smith, I said, Lamar, why are you keeping, you know, bringing me down constantly? John Hostetler became the chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee. I said, John, why do you keep inviting me? I was just a field agent. I would expect you to bring in the high-level bosses. And he said, no. The high-level bosses, for the most part, did not do the job, and they had to make deals with the political machinery to get to where they were. You're the guy on the street and saw this problem on a day-to-day basis. You're the guy with the insight. Any candidate should be serious about solving immigration, instead of shooting from the hip, should be bringing in a team of people who were field-level people, no higher than first-line supervisors. Why? Because these are the folks that had to grapple with this problem on a daily basis. There's nothing hypothetical about banging on a door and executing a warrant. You're seeing with your own eyes what's going on, what works and what doesn't work. The bosses that are way up the food chain, most of them are clueless. And what we've done now is lost institutional memory of immigration. How? Because they got rid of all the old-timers. Most of the people running immigration came from customs. And the way that the administration has handcuffed our agents has made it impossible. So immigration is no longer an issue. And in reality, effective immigration enforcement can be the most effective tool in our arsenal to combat terrorists, to combat the criminals, to make it safe for our citizens, protect the security of our nation, and reinvigorate the middle class. When the politicians tell you that they want to make new jobs, it doesn't matter how many jobs they create if Americans don't get to take the jobs. When we educate people that are our adversaries, we're teaching the people who want to do us in how to do us in. We've got to stop the dynamics that's going on now, and only we, the people, can do that by getting involved. And that's why I always like to say to you, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please go to capsweb.org. Please go to Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. And please, folks, really and truly, get involved. America's future, your future, and our children's future hang in the balance. Look forward to seeing you next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you then.